In a time of great disruption and uncertainty to tech business models, there are some certainties. Here are two of them. Number one, AI is disrupting SaaS business models. And number two, AI is changing the way technology companies deliver services. We will be discussing both those topics today. I'm Tom Slaw, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Joining me today is Ray Mayring, the CEO of Chorus.Docs. So Ray, welcome to Tectonic. It's great to get a chance to meet you. It's the first time we've had a chance to talk. And let's just start with the company. What do you guys do for your customers?
Yeah, so we're a proposal automation software, obviously AI driven. But what we help companies do is to be able to generate pitches, proposals, RFP responses, business cases, any of those critical, complex sales and business development documents. We automate that process, making it easier to create the documents, but then more effective in those documents as well. So higher win rates because of higher quality documents.
And that is such a great AI use case. I mean, it's just a perfect use of the technology. And really, when I talk to professional service organizations that aren't using that kind of capability, it just befuddles me at this point, because it's not like it's future, you know, it's going to be great. It's great right now. It's just such a game changer.
It really is.
And so you've described your approach to this is like boring AI, right? So everyone else wants to talk about really cool, you know, sexy AI. You're talking about boring AI. So what do you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I think that there's just a ton of hype out in the market right now about AI and what it can really do. But we've been doing AI since before AI was cool. So 2019, obviously with generative AI and now reasoning models, we've been able to do kind of more creative and exciting things. But essentially, we help companies to respond to an RFP, right? Who loves responding to an RFP? Very few people that I know actually really enjoy that. So when it's boring, it's about answering questions in an RFP or doing a red flag check on the language that you've used in RFPs, or making sure that you haven't missed a key requirement in that RFP. The technology, as you mentioned in your introduction, I mean, it's hugely powerful and so relevant to that use case. So it's boring in the sense that it does those basic things really, really well, but the productivity and quality gain is substantial. There's nothing boring about that.
Yeah, and it's one of those use cases where a lot of people are talking about, you know, what does AI do to the workforce and how people spend their time and all this kind of stuff. And one of the positive talk tracks is the fact that AI does take out a lot of the grunt work that current knowledge workers have to do. And I think this is, again, this is a classic and mature use case where, to your point, nobody wants to sit there and go through line by line an RFP and like, oh, yeah, we got a chance. Oh, we missed that. Oh, it takes days. Sometimes getting everybody, and when you build these engines and you get them super smart on past RFPs and what to look for, you're getting done in minutes what literally took, you know, hours or days of teams to do. I mean, it is a massive gain.
It's a massive gain. And what it does is it allows the focus to shift from that kind of mundane, let's go find the answer to this question in an RFP we did 2 years ago, to, hey, have I really written this in a way that's going to win this bid? Right? Am I really presenting this in a way that's going to win the bid? So the qualitative elements of that RFP are already amplified through this, because you've got more time, and because the mundane stuff's been taken out of that. Now you can focus on like the win elements of that RFP.
The team's now getting more effective, smarter. You know, gets to focus their brains on the high value stuff. Like you're saying, instead of the grunt work, they're going to focus more on the strategic things in terms of how we actually win this proposal. All the T's and C's stuff. But, you know, the other thing I'd be curious is, you're out there in the marketplace. So there's a shift happening here, and I call it model-driven workflows. And you were going from a world where, if you think about RFPs, you already put the use case on the table. The traditional model, long-standing model, is we have a library of old stuff that we got to go find. And sometimes those libraries are well maintained. Sometimes they are scattered to the four winds within the company.
Yes.
You're always trying to, you know, what's the latest and greatest one that worked? And so that's the world that most professionals in consulting, professional services, that's what they're used to. And the world is moving to model driven. You don't go look for a library. You bounce against a model that you're going to put your current RFP into that model. You're going to get the response out. That is the engine of insight. And I mean, that is the way it should work. It's so much more efficient, et cetera. But I still am kind of shocked, again, that 100% of the consulting organizations aren't doing it, right? I still talk to so many people that they're just, it is not landed that I got to get off libraries and I got to move to models. So just tell me your gut. Where do you think we are sort of percentage-wise when you look at the world of professional services consulting? Is it 20% of the PS organizations that have the light bulb's gone off? Is it 30, 15? Like, just help our audience understand where you think it is.
I'd put that to the lower side, to be honest, Thomas, and I agree with you. And, you know, it's kind of shocking and scary that there's not a higher adoption. But even before AI, right, just with tooling to help you set the library up and just to kind of do the basics there, there is huge white space for us there. There is a low adoption of that technology. Now, we are seeing an acceleration because I think that the productivity jump from the manual to semi-automated world, like let's talk about it, the pre-AI world, you know, it was 5x, but now we're looking at 20, 30, 40x on productivity gains there.
For sure.
So there is a lot more kind of demand in that area. But I think we have to still break down this trust barrier here, because that's where I see the challenge coming in, is that the technology is hugely powerful. People need to start to trust it to do that mundane work and believe that it can actually do that and be convinced that there is that capability to really provide those benefits there. It's not helped by a lot of the hype that overpromises in the market, but there is that kind of mid-ground where we really are seeing 60% to 80% productivity gains in the creation of an RFP response. It's real.
So let's click into this trusting, because you're not the first person to put that on the table, that there are people that are suspect of these AI models, right? When you see that lack of trust, is it under things like, well, I'm not sure that the output isn't hallucinating, that I'm not sure it's going to really be, is that their biggest issue or what is it?
I think last year there was this trust of like, is this thing capturing all my data and putting it into the cloud in some nefarious
way? Oh, okay. That's a different.
So that was last year. Yeah. That was last year. I think we've moved past that to some extent. And there's more of a general usage of kind of the generic tools out there, the ChatGPTs, the Microsoft Copilot.
So people are getting used to it.
People are getting used to those things. I think the trust comes in maybe in two areas. One is this thing answering that question accurately, or did it just invent the answer to this question because it's using its brain or it's, you know, it's training and it's just putting the wrong stuff in there? We have some models to work around that and to kind of build that trust in the process. But what I've heard a lot of is like this disillusionment with the generic AI tools. So let's say, for instance, you're in a large enterprise and they've been told, hey, you've got this new cool tool called Microsoft Copilot. Really very, very amazing tool that, but minimal training provided on how to prompt, how to use that, how to get the most out of that tool. What's the best way to use it? And especially in teams doing RFPs and pitches and proposals. So they get in there with these expectations that are up here, right, onto these generic tools, and it delivers way down there.
And they're like, well, this is no good.
Yeah, this is no good. I don't trust this thing, right? This AI thing is hype. It's hype. Yeah. And that just kind of destroys that trust in that process there. And I think that we've got to move through kind of this phase of rebuilding the trust somehow and saying, hey, that's a good tool under these cases, but under an RFP case, you know, here's a Chorus Docs type tool that will really solve for that. And then you're going to see a lot of your expectations actually achieved because it's specialized.
For sure. I mean, this is a really good thread to talk about because that helps me understand this, you know, where you're seeing this lack of trust, because there's no doubt. I mean, the general models are super powerful. There's, you know, they have great use cases. And we do a lot of case studies on where people are deploying AI within enterprise tech companies and what's working, what's not. And there is no doubt the biggest bang for the buck is not people saying, I took a generic model and kind of gave it to, you know, my PS team and said, we'll see what you can do with it. It's every time we are seeing specialized, you know, the small language models, more, you know, specialized engines for specific use cases. And we have direct experience. So at TSI, we just spent the past 2 years taking all of our research in building our own specialized LLM for our own inquiry. And what did we learn on that? Like you said, there's a lot of tuning to the models. You can help people with prompts, you know, but when you do all that, the quality of that output compared to generic AI is freaking night and day on it. You ask it a question for an engine optimized, hey, tell me something about technology, service, business models, whatever, versus a generic model. It's night and day. And so people need to understand that you do need to go through that life cycle. You need to go do that work. But boy, when you do it, the output is super solid and it's not hype. I mean, you can get those models very tuned.
I agree with that. And I, you know, just to kind of TNL, one of those areas you spoke, just imagine the scenario, taking 20 RFP responses that you've done across 2 years, sending that into a generic tool, and then trying to answer a brand new RFP off of that. Now, what you're going to find in that example is that there are conflicting answers to questions because you've got a new answer that supersedes the older answer, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's some variant to that, like actually that was a US RFP response and this one's a UK RFP response. Yeah. Throw that into a generic model, you're going to get a lot of stuff coming out.
Yep.
What needs to happen is that we actually need to take that piece of content, that previous RFP, process it, know where it's for, you know, extract the key questions out of there, know when they were last given. Is this the latest answer to the question? Is it outdated? What it is? And then through that process, kind of, it's almost like a training in a sense, then apply that new RFP and it's going to come out with a really good output to that.
Yep.
So that's just a basic example showing the difference between generic versus specialized in that world.
And that's for and everybody who's listening should understand that difference so they don't get disappointed. So they don't have, you know, I'll say false positives on trust, right? Where they're like, you know, we talk about boring AI, we talk about the issues of hype. How do you decide? Because, you know, these AI capabilities are just continuing to evolve rapidly. You mentioned reasoning models, et cetera. So how do you as a CEO of a company, and you're looking at that constant changing landscape, decide, okay, that's a great new capability to bolt in. You know, that one, like, just kind of walk me through how, you know, you filter that.
Yeah, well, I think it is really a challenge. I mean, it's probably one of the most exciting times that we live in right now and one of the most challenging because, you know, you pick a lane and next week that lane's kind of like changed or moved or something new's coming along and you're always trying to do it. But the answer to this question for us lies in our customers and having close relationships with them and a lot of contact with them and the ability to bounce and talk through ideas with them. So we've got a group of customers that we've developed a really close relationship with. And as kind of these candidate technologies come up, we develop almost like a PowerPoint use case scenario of how we could deploy this technology in our product. And we will have that conversation with these customers and say, is that valuable? Like, this is what we think it can do. This is what some of our R&D is telling us. But is this truly a valuable scenario? What do you think about adoption of this scenario? And have like this committee around it or community, maybe that's a better word, that helps us make those decisions on where we go with this.
How you prioritize.
And how we prioritize this kind of tech. And then we'll get like some early stuff out to them. And we ask them for like tolerance on this stuff because it's going to come out and, you know, it's not always going to deliver exactly what we all want it to, but help us shape this. And we've got these partner customers that have been on a great journey with us throughout this whole AI kind of generative AI learning cycle that have helped us just to shape that a lot more and cut through a lot of the hype about what's really going to make impact in their businesses.
So, I mean, this is really interesting, Fred, as well, because what you're describing for a software company is, I would submit, a very different product lifecycle. Because people have always had customer advisory boards and they help build roadmaps. I mean, people have always done that. But the roadmap process is long and laborious typically, right? Like you get a set of features, you throw it back to engineering, they go work on those features, and eventually they come out and you do some beta testing, then general release or whatever. And that lifecycle, I mean, SaaS shortened it for sure compared to the previous way we did software. But I'm getting a sense talking to you with these AI capabilities, we're compressing the lifecycle even more.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. We can get to a prototype like within days.
Isn't that, you know, insane?
Even a workable prototype. We can get a workable prototype in front of a customer in days and say, kick this thing around and tell us what you think about that.
Yeah.
Right. And we used to have to take a month to do that type of thing. And then there was this huge investment. And we're still figuring this out, to be honest, Thomas, but
I bet
like it's changing our paradigm about how we take features to market, how we move. what's disposable code? Because like we don't have to worry about this code ever actually seeing the light of production. This is really just disposable to test an idea in a broader base than just our kind of product teams and our use teams, get some rapid feedback on that and then iterate through it. It's still the old lean model, you know, but it's just accelerated.
I'd say that I think the life cycle is just compressed, which makes you much more comfortable experimenting. Like you said, I can experiment, and it's not like I just spent the last year of engineering on this, and now I don't want to throw it away because it's sort of sunk cost. Now it's like, hey, I spent a couple of weeks on that. It's clearly not a use case that's going to work.
Yeah,
forget it. Let's move on. Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence.
So, you know, so let's bring the lens back because, you know, the other thing, you know, I don't know how old you are, but I know you didn't join tech last year. So you've been in tech for a while.
Yes, I have.
And just like I have been.
Is it the gray that's giving it away?
Yeah. but I think, you know, this is an interesting time for just how tech business models operate. And as you sit in that CEO chair, and now you're really operating in a world that's different than the one you would have been operating in, you know, 10 years ago, right?
Definitely.
How do you prepare and how are you sort of getting your teams across the company to operate differently in an AI world? Like we're already talking about how sort of product development, engineering may work differently. You know, what about sales? What about services? You know, how do you get people to say, hey, this is a different model and we got to the old way we did sales or services or everybody, it's got to change. Just give me a little flavor of what you're experiencing there.
Yeah, we had a big chat about that as an executive kind of late last year and then again early this year. And we said, look, this is going to change how we work. This is not just about changing our customers. This is going to impact us. And the obvious areas were, you know, in engineering, like you could see that using tooling and engineering to build fast. But as you said, what about sales? What about our customer teams? So we've made it a critical part of every executive in Chorus Docs's leadership team to have an AI strategy for that team. Every single team needs to do this. And then we've put together this kind of internal AI advisory board that just runs things like prioritization, governance, those kinds of, kind of cross-functional there. But every single executive has an AI responsibility and we have KPIs around that and they need to drive that kind of productivity gain. Now, we looked at two different approaches to this. One approach was, hey, let's hire an AI expert internally, task that person to come and like build out AI across the the entire business. But really what that's doing, if we take that approach, is that we're delegating the AI responsibility out to somebody.
Somebody else.
Mm-hmm. And our belief is that AI is going to be such a critical part of every single thing that we do that every executive leader in the business needs to own AI for their department. It needs to be fundamental to them, just like their hiring would be fundamental to them as well. Sure, HR might play a role in finding candidates, but the decision is going to be made by the executive at the end of the day. So, you know, we've taken kind of this more federated approach to it versus getting some singular person in to kind of roll out AI across the area, but still having a board in place to just govern, prioritize, and pick the right lanes. And the other thing I'll just comment on that is, you know, like most SaaS companies today, we run a ton of software ourselves. And a lot of that tooling that we already have, they are introducing and have been introducing new AI capabilities, now agentic AI capabilities. And we absolutely need to make sure that we're sweating those investments that we're having and getting the most out of those, in our opinion, before we go and build a whole bunch of stuff in-house for it. So there's pressure to kind of reuse what we have today, get the most out of that tooling, and only really build kind of in those gaps where those tools aren't there.
So if I play some of that back, and I think that what you're describing, what I've seen in the wild with other companies, is a really effective structure. And that is, you know, if AI is somebody else's thing, so, you know, I run services, I run sales, I run whatever, and I'm like, yeah, we got an AI task force over there. They'll eventually tell me maybe what, you know, I should be doing with this. Right. And I can keep my head down as a leader there and sort of stay ignorant on what potential AI has for my function. And I believe that's a losing strategy, because I really do believe every tech professional right now, regardless of function, has got to be studying how has AI changed the way my department works. And they've got to master that sooner than later. So I've seen other companies do the same thing, where they go to their leaders and say, you have to have an AI plan. And you have to start identifying case studies, et cetera. And then the mapping of having, you know, whether it's, you know, governance board or sort of expertise in a central location that is assisting them on that, because you don't want a complete stovepipe model, because then everybody's reinventing the wheel. So you need that central sort of coordination going, oh, sales deployed this, it worked really well. Oh, by the way, hey, customer success, that's a good use case for you too. That really helps. So I think it's that 1-2 punch that gets it done. But I think it's a big mistake right now if you're a CEO and you have not tasked each of your, you know, direct reports for their departments to have an AI plan. That at this point, I think, is a mistake.
We couldn't agree more. I mean, we absolutely seen that. We've seen the benefits of that as well, in like that increased ownership of AI from our executives and their knowledge growing on how AI can be effective. And it's going to benefit us internally and externally as well. One other thing I'll just add on that is it has to be outcomes driven, right? There's no point in doing AI for the point of just AI. What problem are we trying to solve here?
That's absolutely right.
And so we, as part of that mandate to the executives, we said, look at the problems. Where are you challenged? Where are the time gaps on this thing? Where are the bottlenecks in this process? And let's pick those areas to prioritize around AI usage there versus, hey, we just need to, like, AI is cool now and everyone's using this thing, so let's go get that piece of software. Let's really make sure that it's hitting the pain points and driving effectiveness into your department.
For sure. We've been doing case studies in this for over 2 years across, you know, everything, sales, services, you know, the different service functions, et cetera. And the common thread where people are most successful and they get really a solid ROI is exactly what you said. They identify a workflow area that they're like, let's go after that very specifically. Yep. Here's what we believe the impact could be. Now let's deploy. Let's make sure we're really, you know, all that stuff. And even the use case that you guys help companies master is the same thing. A PS organization goes, hey, proposals, that's one we're going to go after. Let's focus on it. Let's make sure we get the ROI. And you get it. I mean, that's the other thing. Every time people, you know, really focus on use cases that, again, are already mature in the industry, the ROIs is not like, hey, man, that helped me out 5 or 10%. Like you said earlier, it's 50, it's 60. It's like massive ROIs when you get this. But I want to ask you a question back to the, you know, well, actually all these workflows, the ones you help customers with as well as your internal ones. The other thing that I believe AI is forcing that traditional enterprise software actually never did force is people actually have to get their shit together on their processes.
Yes.
If you don't have a well-defined process, it's super hard to just magically bolt AI into it.
I mean, it's actually amazing that you raised that, because we just had that discussion this exact week, right? Because as we've been reviewing some of these plans, we've been like, hey, this is not an AI problem. This is not a software problem. This is a process problem.
Yeah.
There's a break here. There's a process and kind of interdepartmental problem, or there's something broken there. Okay, so fix that piece first.
You have to.
Right? Yep. You got to actually get on the whiteboard together and draw that out and fix that. Then sure, AI can plug in there and can solve that. But to your point, it's forcing the conversation. We may not have had that conversation if we weren't embarking on this internal use journey. Right? We may have just tolerated that issue because we're so focused externally on, you know, driving wins for our customers. But this is forcing us to actually sit down and have a look at that and say, okay, wait, we got a break here. We got to fix this. Okay, let's fix the people piece and the process piece, and then let's plug AI in and other tooling in behind that to automate that.
Yeah, and again, I think what's so fascinating to me personally is enterprise software to support all these processes has been around now for decades, but it really didn't force the tightening of, we have a piece of software to put data in and stuff, but what is the process we're all following, you know, right, for this workflow? AI forces, you know, that, which I think is a good thing. I also, AI is forcing us to clean up data because, you know, you want solid data for these models.
Yeah.
My assertion has been that I think what we're going to see in enterprises, sort of this great rationalization, instead of every department having all these disjointed processes, so I've got like 15 sales processes and 30 CS processes and whatever, you're going to start to see this rationalize across departments because you're going to start to realize these things really are interconnected.
Yes.
And so we'll see less processes, but we'll see common processes now,
right,
across these departments.
Right. Or holistic processes across them. I couldn't agree more, because those teams are kind of like, they're getting closer and closer, and their processes have to cover that space more holistically. It cannot just be siloed or handed from system A to system B.
Exactly.
Because we, you know, we don't have an integration there.
Different systems.
Yeah, exactly. So we got a person sitting in the middle there.
Yeah.
Fully agree.
And the one that I think is going to be the holy grail on this, which was going to be very helpful for customers, is actually the customer engagement process from the beginning. I mean, from when we're marketing to people, to when we sell them, to when we service them, you know, to when we sell them the next thing, that is such a disjointed process historically in tech. It's lots of handoffs, lots of throwing stuff over. AI, I think, is really going to help rationalize that.
You know, that's one of the first use cases that we've identified for an immediate improvement. And I'll give you an example. We have a discovery call with a new customer that comes on board. Prior to that, they've possibly written some commentary on our website about, you know, this is what we're looking for. We've engaged with them through sales calls, all the way through, learned about them. Without AI and without process reengineering, the next step would be for an onboarding consultant to basically get on a call and ask them all the same questions.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
All the same questions. 100%. And we go through onboarding, exit onboarding, we hand over now to account management and customer success, and guess what they do? They ask them all the same questions again.
Exactly.
Because for humans, it's going to take so much time to go and synthesize all of those gone calls, all of the previous conversations. So it's easier just to ask the question again and get the answer. But now, to your point about this end-to-end, we can literally take every conversation that we've had with that customer, be it email, a recorded call, onboarding call, sales call, whatever it is, and synthesize all of that into kind of a one single picture of what's important for that customer. And we don't have to repeat conversations over and over again. We can validate, has this changed? Has this moved? Is this the same? That this is what we know about you.
Yep.
And just from a customer experience, that's going to delight that customer even more. And it's going to obviously be more productive for us as well and for them. So small example, but just illustrating the point that we absolutely agree with you on.
Yeah, and I'll link this back to this conversation of model-driven workflows. I did a paper on model-driven revenue, and part of that, one of the components is what we call a radar system. And the radar is what you're describing is you have a model that is ingesting information about the customer from everywhere, right? From your marketing website, from external sources, from your CRM. And that is a source of truth. So if anybody services wants to onboard customer A, it's right there.
Right.
That's what's going to go. And the model is going to say, you know, here's the things you should focus on in this onboarding. I mean, it's going to build the perfect onboarding, you know, agenda based on everything we know about the customer. And that's where the game's going to go, I'm convinced.
And tailored, right? Tailored.
Yeah.
Not just a generic, like, here's just how we onboard our customers. This is, you are in this industry, in this country, these are your problems. Here's a program that matches your exact needs and we can fulfill it.
Yeah, because the other powerful thing about the, again, model-driven workflows is it's so much easier to personalize the output.
Right.
Which is what you just said. You can just, it's, you know, what would have taken just hours and hours and hours for somebody to do individually. Now you see, to your point, based on country, based on industry, based on the size of your company, based on all this stuff, this is what we're going to focus on in this onboarding.
And we can move faster because when we have to schedule meetings with customers, there's everyone's calendar that needs to be kind of handled through this thing. And, oh, no, we couldn't get player A on the call, so we're going to kick it out to next week. Well, player A has already told us at the outset of this thing what they actually want, right? So beyond just that, it's going to shrink the duration of some of these projects as well because we're more efficient in just bringing everything together and delivering hyper-personalized outcomes.
Yeah, faster time to value, which is what customers, I mean, that's what they're looking for.
One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas, like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free.
So there's another thread I wanted to pull on with you, and that is, because I know this is top of mind for a lot of our members, is the impact of AI on how you price technology solutions today. And the general theme we've talked about in this podcast many times is that historically for SaaS companies, foundational model is always, you know, user-based pricing pretty much. You're going to have more employees using my software. So I naturally grow. As your company grows, I'm going to grow with you. Well, it's very clear. We see this in the tech data already. There is a decoupling that's already occurred between revenue growth and employee growth. Yes. You see companies growing billions of dollars of revenue, not like, you know, millions, billions of dollars of revenue with less people. I mean, that's already happened. So user-based pricing gets kind of dicey, right? And especially in AI, like we're talking about, if you have a solution that has a massive ROI, how do you capture some of that value? So and you guys are in the middle of that. So how do you think about that?
Well, I think it's going to need to be a phased approach to this, right? So we're still having user-based conversations today because that's what the buyer is comfortable with the conversation.
Sure. Yeah.
But as you correctly state, I mean, it's almost like a perverse incentive because what we see happening is that, you know, we don't want to press this on users because I'm not saying users are going to go down, but they're certainly going to be static,
right?
Certainly going to be static. They might go down.
There's no natural growth.
There's no natural growth. Okay. So the way we're thinking about this is really phasing it through. We see the first phase still being kind of user-based. Second phase is user and a level of kind of consumption-based pricing there. So it could be per RFP, per pitch, or it could be per interaction with an agent, right? That's performing work on your behalf. And we're quite honestly still playing with a couple of models about that consumption base and testing things because we're not like, you know, pay as you go cell phone that you can just work down off the credits there. That's not how people think about proposal software.
Right.
They think differently about that. So we're trying to find the right unit. But we see that as the second phase. Some users, some agentic consumption-based pricing, and then probably a third phase where that user phases out and more agentic piece is happening. It's not going to happen overnight in our space, we believe, because predictability and cost is critical to most of our customers, and it's easy to predict users, which is why SaaS models work well.
Yeah.
But the more we move across into this consumption, the more we need to help our customers to be able to predict the expense and the outcomes on that and build kind of dashboards and models for them to create more predictability and then step through that. So, you know, I guess for us, it's probably 6 month chunks on those things, like 6 months more. And then we're going to introduce a different pricing in the next 6 months and see how that goes and just keep evaluating what we're hearing in the market and how we're hearing things. We work with a lot of law firms, AEC firms, accounting firms, you know, professional services firms. And their procurement team still want to see kind of this, like, how many users is this going to cost me? But that shift is going to change. We know it's going to happen.
So I want to riff on this for a little bit because this is emerging, right? I mean, what you just articulated, I think, is where a lot of executive teams are sitting right now. It's like they know the models are going to have to shift. It's unclear. And just to play back what we're hearing in the industry. So number one, this realization that user-based pricing is not a growth pricing model in the world of AI, I think that light bulb has gone off. Like people realize, right? Yes. So that's the oh shit moment. It's like, okay, shit. So that happened. That's happened. So right. the second thing then is people, but what do I move to? What do I move right. to? And the place that people are mostly, you know, running to is I need to go usage or consumption. And the hair on that is what you described is the fact that you can do that, but customers do need predictability and you need predictability. Yeah. So customers doesn't want to get a big utility bill at the end of the month going, hey, it's three times more than I thought I was going to pay. That's no bueno for me. But yeah. also for you, you don't want to sign somebody up and say, well, like, I have no idea. How do I forecast my revenue?
And so 100%, yeah.
Yeah. So to do consumption-based pricing, and we've interviewed companies that have been in this model for like a DocuSign, we had their CCO on, you know, they've been click per click for a very long time. What happens is you get very good and sophisticated at modeling the consumption. So you can go to a company of a certain size and say, okay, in your world, you're going to say, look, for your professional services firm, it's going to be X amount of RFPs, you know, typically blah, blah, blah. So here's a plan, right? And so that I believe will happen. However, here's something to think about, right?
Yeah.
I still think there's value leakage there. Because again, these AI use cases, when you go in, again, the ROI is not 10%, like in the old days of, you know, software, like I can save you time here, time there. So these ROIs are going to be massive. So if you can go in and retool a PS organization and say, look, I can take out 60% or more of the cost of generating RFPs, what's that worth to you? I mean, that's worth a lot, right? And so I think that in the world of AI, you know, companies, in the most fascinating company out there right now to study, I think, is Palantir. And okay. the reason is, and people will look at Palantir and say, well, that's super bespoke and it's very consultative and that's not what I do for a living. But, you know, that's not the lesson there. Palantir goes in and says, look, you know, you've got a problem. I can get you an outcome. And there, if you do any type of, you know, searching on their pricing models, it's very nuanced. They've got a lot of different, you know, they've got a basic platform, get on the platform. They've got some usage, but they have outcome-based pricing models in play as well. And, right. you know, it's a very sophisticated model because what they're taking off the table is the business value of what they're delivering for that client. And if you look at them profitable, their revenue multiplier right now is, so just took this at 52. They're one of the highest valuations of any technology provider out there, right? And so, I believe personally, TSI believes that, you know, keeping margin on the table are going to be the technology providers who are, you know, unlocking these AI use cases like you are and positioning themselves as really value creators and, right. and creating a sophisticated, you know, model in place that allows you as the provider to capture some of that value. And it's a great handshake, right? The customer is going to save $10 million and you're going to take a percentage of that, but that percentage is going to be more than if you just had user or just consumption-based.
Yeah. I love that. I love that analogy that you just used there, because we faced with this challenge. You know, some of our customers, if we just went on a consumption-based model, some of our customers are saying, we want to do less RFPs, but we only want to do the quality ones that we're going to win.
Right.
Yeah. So now you go and come up with system. You come up with a consumption-based model that says this is per RFP, for example, and you're going backwards on that account. But if you can drive up the quality of the RFP response, you're going to drive up their revenues through that. And if we can figure out that outcome scenario that you just said, you know, we're going to increase sales by 25% because high quality RFP response. That's where the gold really is on that one. It's a more complex model to get to, but I mean, it's absolutely, I think, where the gold is.
Yeah. It, you know, and people have been kicking around outcome-based value, you know, gain sharing type of models. We've been studying them for 15 years, and they're very, very rare in the world of tech for a lot of different reasons. Technology providers are nervous about them. Customers are nervous. I'm going to pay you, you know, some percentage. But I believe, again, strongly that that's going to have to be the ground that a lot, not all, but a lot of technology providers get to, because again, you're unlocking so much business value. And if you're only paying per click, it's not going to be interesting. You know what I mean? It's just not going to be enough there.
Yeah.
So it's a really fascinating and again, fast moving topic. I'm watching the clock. I'm going to give you just one more question. I'm just curious, again, in the chair that you sit in, What new kind of roles or skills do you think are going to emerge within SaaS companies that are going to be important to success? Is there any changes you're seeing there?
I would say maybe three areas that we're thinking about. So one that we're seeing right now is this concept of a GTM engineer kind of coming in like into this super RevOps world where they're figuring out how to go faster in the sales and customer success area and figuring out, you know, not just GTM processes, but also the tooling and how AI is going to be adopted there. We're seeing evidence of that right now. We're seeing job roles coming in there.
I'm really curious on that one. Because most companies have some version of RevOps in place that is responsible for those workflows, like creating proposals and all that kind of fun stuff. And this is a sort of a net new profile of somebody who is really thinking about sort of the tech stack and how we're going to re-engineer those workflows. That's their
correct.
That's
tech stack, re-engineering the workflows and driving those outcomes. Like, we need to improve qualification rates. So how do we use process and tech to be able to do that? We need to reduce churn. You know, how do we do that? So it's an internal role that's beyond just RevOps of, you know, like deal desk and you know, those kind of things. It's more strategic there. It still needs to be owned by the executive. I could go back to that. This person can bring specialization in, but it still needs to be owned by the executive. So that's one area. We strongly believe that value selling and the role of the value engineer or the value enabler in the sales team is going to be more critical than ever. I mean, let's just take the outcome piece that you've just spoken about. In order to get to an outcome-based pricing model, you need to know, what was this thing costing me before and what's it costing me now? Or what was my win rate before or what's now? And you actually need to plug that into a sophisticated return on investment to know, let's model this out. Now, most people are doing that kind of in an Excel spreadsheet trying to work out ROI and is this valuable? But we see more and more of a shift towards the start of the sales conversation being around, here's the return on investment that you're going to get in this area. So value enablement, value engineering, we see that as a key role. And then the third is just adoption. Like, we already got adoption roles today, but how do we further drive adoption and training and kind of the human elements that need to come along on this journey? Because as I mentioned in the outset of this, there's this huge disillusionment. And most of that is because of lack of training and guidance and advice.
Yeah,
exactly. Adoption. Yeah. And so we're going to see some roles that are going to develop. I believe we're already investing in these roles to just drive adoption and help people come on this AI journey and get the most out of it. So those roles exist today. I don't say they're new, but they might take a more prominent position around the table than maybe what they have in the past.
The framing I would play back to you listening to you is, and I agree, versions of these roles exist, but they're going to operate very differently if you start with the go-to-market. I mean, if RevOps exists, RevOps owns process, but having somebody who comes in and says, no, my lens is, how do I re-engineer these workflows using a different tech stack? That's different.
Yes.
Adoption, we've had CSMs in play now forever who are responsible for adoption. I believe that how their role is going to change is what we were chipping on earlier. They're not going to wake up in the morning and say, gosh, I wonder what I should do with customer A. It's going to be model-driven.
Right.
You're going to be using systems that are monitoring and getting feedback, and they're going to say, hey, CSM, customer A is clearly lagging on this. You know, here's the play you need to go run. And so I think it's going to allow us to deploy that adoption resource way more efficiently and effectively.
I agree with that.
So it's going to be a different game. But also what you're chipping on is the importance of these things is getting higher and higher. You can't just sell and say, well, you know, hope you get the value there. You know, it's just like,
Stick a landing. And on the value stuff, you know, there's so much feature selling that we've seen through the SaaS kind of world there, but the value selling with proliferation of thousands of agents, which of these agents is actually going to deliver a return on investment for us? And we're just hearing more of that conversation right now. Like, we need to see ROI. We need to understand what's the outcome of this thing, how this is grown. We definitely see that area. Probably a few more, but start with those three. Yeah, I think it's going to change everything. Quite honestly, everything's going to change.
Yeah, it is. And again, back to comments earlier, still kind of befuddles me that more people in our industry not internalized how much change is going to happen here for the next, not 5 or 10 years, but like over the next 3 years. Everything's in place. Pricing model, the delivery models, just how we're monetizing, how we drive value. Again, model-driven workflows, all of this is going to unfold. And the other thing, because you did this whole issue of trust or disillusionment or hype. Every time I read an an article like in the Wall Street Journal that says, well, people aren't sure there's real ROI with AI. I'm sitting there thinking, I have seen millions and millions and, you know, millions of dollars of ROI use cases that are already landed.
Yeah.
I just don't, it befuddles me. So no,
that's right. Yeah. We see it every day. Absolutely right.
Yeah. So I'm watching the clock here. Really appreciate you stopping in. Really great conversation and sharing your insights. I always close these with a question of the day. And to the audience, again, I've said this before, but have you really thought through how AI is going to fundamentally change the way you operate? Cheers, everybody.
Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence.